Welcome to the latest Big Squid production as we return to our science fiction segment, Space Podyssey. Join Ben Elwood and me as we dig into Ridley Scott's masterpiece, Alien. Thank you very much for joining me today for the first of two Big Squid podcasts this week. On Thursday, I'll be chatting with Dr. Aditi Paul about her new book, The Current Collegiate Hookup Culture. And it is a really funny and interesting podcast. Dr. Paul lives in New York and her work was really fascinating. And I'm rapt to have her on the podcast. That episode will drop on Thursday. A nice little change of pace. You know, a little bit like the Bryden Coverdale episode. Bryden, who of course is the shark on the chase. Like to mix things up a little bit. And Dr. Paul is fantastic. So that'll drop on Thursday. A quick heads up as well, if you're living in Sydney, people are always complaining that I forget to promote when I'm performing live, and I know, I just often forget, to be completely honest. So how's this for double your bang for your buck? I'm doing support for Tom Gleason's live hard quiz show at the Enmore Theatre this Saturday, the 2nd of July. So if you want to see the brilliant Tom Gleason doing the utterly fantastic hard quiz and you want to see a little bit of me at the start, head on down. And if you do come along, please hang around and say hello afterwards. That's going to be fun. As you are aware, all of our Patreon subscribers not only have access to extra podcasts, scripts, and bonus material, actually put up a whole lot of stuff related to Dogs in Space, which we covered on the Pass the Ammo segment last week with Garth Jones. So a lot of extra things there at the moment, just about that one movie. But not only do you have access to all of that stuff, but you also have an episode dedicated to you. And today's shout out goes to a name you've probably heard mentioned on this podcast before. It's Craig Egan. Craig and I have been friends since the 90s. The 90s. You know what that is? A long time ago. And I am the atheist godfather to his eldest child. So, I hold him awake at night and I explain to him, there is no God. There is only me. And then eventually when he stops crying, he goes to sleep. When it was time to dedicate an episode to Craig, I thought, what better episode than a story about something menacing, hiding in the shadows, waiting to pounce and rip you apart and lay eggs in you? Is that a secret metaphor between Craig and me about someone? Or is that just me putting something out into the universe for the rest of you to overthink? What a glass onion one! Maybe the answer is in that last reference. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this episode, Craig. I'm guessing you will listen to this in about 3 months from now because you are very busy with work and juggling two children who seem to be sick all the time. So for those of you who live in Adelaide, by the way, Craig runs Adelaide Comedy at the Rhino Room. You might want to keep an eye out for some upcoming announcements that might be happening there, maybe in September. Maybe. What could that be? I don't know. Enough of the in-jokes, or possible in-jokes. Now it is time to journey into deep space, where the crew of the commercial starship Nostromo are awakened early from their cryo-sleep capsules to investigate a distress call from a crashed spaceship. What they discover is that evil exists in all manner of forms and in space. No one can hear you scream. Strap yourselves in, kids. We're entering the world of Alien.
Still with us, Brett?
Clay.
Yeah.
Oh, he's dead.
Anybody ever tell you you look dead?
Intercepted the transmission of unknown origin.
What kind of a transmission?
SOS.
Human.
Ash, can you see this?
I've never seen anything like it.
Moving on to second position.
We've got this far, we must go on. We have to go on.
It doesn't look like an SOS.
It looks like a warning. life. Wait a minute, there's movement.
What the hell is that?
You still don't understand what you're dealing with, do you? Perfect organism.
The emergency destruct system is now active. The ship will detonate in T-minus 10 seconds.
Oh, God, it's running right towards you.
8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3. Just to give you a warning, I've had my flu shot, which means I'm full of a vaccine, which means I'm now full of nanites, which is going to control my brain and make me become a part of the Knights of Cydonia, and then I'm going to rise up to become the ruler of Australia and declare war on all those countries that I fucking hate. Like Narnia. We're going to fight Narnia. We're going to nuke it. Either that or a little Scott Morrison's about to... No, more like a Peter Dutton's going to burst out of my chest. Pfft, oh, no.
Yuck, that would be demonic, right?
Oh, man, I'd fight it to the end. If I saw Peter Dutton bursting out of my chest, I'd hold it by the neck with the last of my strength and go, "We're going together, motherfucker!"
He's got a Putin-like demonic quality to him, don't
yeah,
you
yeah,
reckon?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I know there's that really famous photo of him lit like Voldemort. Yes. Like, where, you know, he's all shadowed and everything, but it's like, light anyone like that and they're going to look pretty evil, but he's got, you know, real kind of mannequin dead-eyed stare to him.
Yeah, yeah. Look, it's every Liberal leader gets worse, and so even though I want Scott Morrison out, I just keep thinking, geez, in 5 years, is it going to be Voldemort? Is it going to be Darth Vader? Like, what's happening here? Anyway, let's not get bogged down in the depressing reality of the world. Oh, hang on a sec. But fingers crossed. We're recording this 2 days after the South Australian elections. And if anyone has not seen the speech given by the new Labor leader, look it up. It is the best speech by an Australian politician. Probably, like, it's probably the most inspiring speech I've seen since the... And it's easy to make fun of this man, but the apology that Kevin Rudd gave back in 2007, that was a pretty amazing speech. But I would say this is even more powerful because it contains a level of grace that we have not seen in Australian politics or any politics for a long time. So if you would to feel inspired, check out that speech.
We were just saying before the mics got turned on that it does feel like the populace is swinging towards wanting more of that. I think we're all done with the internal bickering and the career politicians knifing each other for their own aspirations.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's nothing like the worst floods, the worst fires, the eve of World War III and a global pandemic to make everyone go, you know what, guys, like, sort your shit out and lead us.
Yeah, maybe I'd just like someone to be nice.
Yeah.
Or you know,
what is not a craven asshole the time.
Like not a tool. Like not a
someone that can control their facial expression and not be smirking as they walk through the ruined floodplains of a devastated community.
Well, Peter,
just control your face, mate.
Yeah,
it's really easy. Scott control Morrison, your fucking face.
You piece of fucking shit. Like just those craven, photo shoots trying to prove I'm just a bloke like everybody else.
Awful.
It's like, but you might be a bloke like some blokes, and I reckon those blokes are cunts.
Awful cunts.
Awful. Peter Malinauskas, who was the new South Australian Premier, when the moment that he really won me over was when he called for everyone to have empathy for not only the Liberal Party. He said the Liberal Party were important because... You know, they have different ideals, but they're important to democracy and to have... he had a lot of empathy and he wanted everyone to have empathy for the politicians and their families that had lost jobs. And it's like...
That's great.
Nice. By the way, insane that that made me teary because that should just be a natural thing, but it was a nice thing.
Dude, I've been watching The Wire... And it was made in 2003, and I'm getting all weepy and reminiscent for post 9/11 terror alerts.
I know. Remember the good old days?
Oh, Remember when it was just flip phones and it wasn't just this constant assault on your psyche every fucking nanosecond?
Remember the good old days when you'd be on a plane and it would just hit a little bit of turbulence and you'd think, did someone just blow up the back of the plane?
At least it was. At least the threat was one direction. Yes. You know, it was coming at you from one angle. It wasn't this, you know, omnidirectional nightmare panopticon.
Fires, plagues, war.
Yeah,
there's some religious zealots out there just jerking off every day, just going, oh, this is what I've been waiting for. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jesus.
The nut outside my train station looks very chuffed with himself these days. Yeah. Very vindicated.
Yeah.
I told you.
The end is even nigher. This is a podcast about the movie Alien. And when did you first see this film?
Oh, I had a great first experience with this. I didn't see it until I was about 19 years old.
Right.
And I watched it in broad daylight on a laptop, and halfway through I had to slam the lid shut because I was going to vomit from terror.
Oh,
I was so afraid.
Yeah.
And it was like the most terrible conditions to watch a scary movie in.
Yeah.
And even still, I felt like I was going to barf. I was just out of my mind with fear.
Was it the birth scene or was it
No, it was here, kitty, kitty, kitty.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, okay.
Kitty, kitty, for 7 fucking minutes.
Yeah, yeah. we'll get to that scene. I want to discuss that properly with you. So, Mum saw it at the cinema. Well, I was way too young to see it.
Yeah.
And Mum saw it at the cinema and came home. Yeah. And I think she may have seen it with a good friend of hers. And they were both like, anyway. And the way they discussed it, because they obviously, like, I was young, you know, so they didn't want me to know too much.
Yeah.
So the movie had a mythology for me before I even saw it. It's like, well, what?
As the scary movie.
Yeah, how terrifying it was going to be.
Yeah.
And so I honestly can't remember how long it was between Mum seeing it at the cinema and then the age.
Yeah.
But I first saw it on VHS.
Sure.
And so I built it up pretty, like, I'd built cathedrals to it in my mind as to what I was going to see. And then I saw it and I was furious that they had not talked it up enough because it was terrible.
Great.
Like,
it
was like, holy shit, you said this was really scary, but it's much scarier than that.
That's great, because the opposite happened to me with The Exorcist.
Right.
The Exorcist was like this ominous thing that hung over family dinner. Like, you know, they would talk about The Exorcist as this just unbelievably terrifying film, and my mum would, you know, talk it up all the time. And when I finally saw it, I was like, oh, this isn't scary. This is just a little girl in funny face makeup going, fuck me, Satan.
Have you rewatched it?
Yeah, I don't care for The Exorcist.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's just my favourite horror film.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Because I'm not really a horror fan.
Yeah.
But to me, that film is, like, deliberately so mundane.
Mm.
That's what makes it really terrifying.
Yeah,
so
right.
Especially, like, I even find it quite scary. Like, I did a rewatch last year and was still like, I found a Ouija board. And I'm like, yeah. It's also got my favorite scene of any horror film, which is the when the priest has been kicked out of the room.
Oh, yeah.
And he's downstairs and the mum says, is my child going to die? And he tells her no. And then the next scene is him walking up the white stairs. So you go, oh, it's his ascension back to his faith. And he is going to his death because he is going to heaven. And it's like such a powerful scene.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those ones that, like, opposite to what your reaction to Alien was. I think it was, in my mind, it was like, this is going to fuck me up.
Yeah.
And also, like, my most abiding memory of Exorcist is at a giant family do, and something came up about Exorcist, and my 80-year-old grandfather started miming having sex with a crucifix, screaming, fuck me, Jesus, fuck me, Jesus.
Wow.
And so that is a very indelible image in my mind.
That is indelible. I didn't even see it, and now I've got it stuck in my head. That's amazing.
And the whole table, like, the whole family just, like, losing their minds laughing.
Yeah.
So that, like, it's like the seeing a Citizen Kane post Simpsons. There's always the kind of the gel of the Simpsons over the top of it.
That was I had Alex J on the podcast recently, and I was incredibly impressed that she saw The Godfather for the first time. And you think about how often the Marlon Brando Corleone has been mimicked, and she still loved it, you know. And I thought that might have once again filtered into too many parodies for it to... But anyway.
Postmodern nightmare.
Yeah. Top four responses. This is our segment, Google Me Chuck. Top four responses when you Google Alien. How scary is Alien? Why is Alien an 18? And I was like, out of 20? Out of 22? No, what it means is the science fiction movie Alien was banned for under 18s because the monster was thought to be too sexy and presented a perverse view of reproduction. Archival material reveals. When it was released in 1979, I was seven, hence why I had not seen it, the film was given an X certificate in line with other horror films of the time. So, so we will discuss this more as well. There's a lot of
sexual imagery, Geiger
and the sexual imagery, etc.
A lot, yeah.
The other questions being, why is Alien so good? Watch it, just watch it, mate. And what is the original Alien? Alien. Anyway, segment first context. These are some of the sci-fi movies that came out before and after 1975. Rollerball. 1976. The Man Who Fell to Earth with Dad. They're doing a remake, or not a remake, they're doing a sequel TV series with Chiwetel Ejiofor in it, but they've got Bill Nye playing the Bowie character. And I thought, oh, that's... I watched the first 5 minutes of it and I went,
I've never seen this film.
Oh, haven't you?
No.
Maybe we...
Put it on the list.
Yeah, put it on the list. I'll be curious to know what you think. It's a...
I'm almost terrified to... What if I don't like it? And I feel like you're going to...
Just stop being friends.
Yeah.
Just maybe, make it simple.
Maybe excommunicated.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry about that. It'll be fine. And any listeners, like, if you want to write to me that you didn't like it, well, just, you know, be prepared to be blocked. Why are you having a go at my dad? 1977, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Are you ever going to watch For All Mankind on Apple TV? Can I give away a spoiler?
Sure.
Because, so For All Mankind is an alternate history where Russia gets to the moon before America, and then the cascading events that occur from that, which is great. By the 80s, they've got bases on the moon where, you know, because everything's just been ramped up and now it's become a political maneuver. You know, Russia wants to have, you know, their technology up there and America wants to have their technology up there. So it's quite fascinating. But because of the change in... because of the change in history, Close Encounters wins all the Academy Awards. It's like one of those tasty little world-building treats that you go, that's great. 1978, Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Great. Fuck. Fucking love that movie.
Yeah, maybe we should do that as well.
That's a scary movie.
Yeah. See all the hairs that just stood up on my arm just thinking about the ending. Yeah. 1980, Altered States, and 1981, Outland. This movie, the segment, the year that was, these are some of the sci-fi movies that came out in 1979. The Black Hole, the Disney movie, The Black Hole. I remember loving that as a kid.
I've never seen this.
It's where my love of black holes started. Not a euphemism. I could tell by your giggle where you went. I wasn't going to say it, but you giggled and I thought, well, why not say my favorite line? But I've never gone back to it because I just... No, it's going to be really disappointing. Yeah. But as a kid, loved it.
Great.
Mad Max.
Yep.
Meteor.
Never seen it. I'm assuming that's one of those, like, you know, 70s disaster movies. Yeah. Yes.
Moonraker.
Oh, yeah.
And
Moonraker's the Bond movie, right?
Yep. And Star Trek the Motion Picture. So
never seen it.
So that is a... so you can see Alien really comes along and it's like, this Lovecraftian sci-fi film.
Yeah, yeah. Similar to what The Thing must have done when it came out.
Yeah. But luckily for Alien, it wasn't going up against, what, E.T.? Yeah. So before we start really digging into the film, how many of the Alien movies have you seen? And where does, like, I'm not asking you to rank all of them.
Oh, this is my favorite. Absolutely.
Too.
Yep. Absolutely. I've seen the original four. Actually, I've seen them all because I've seen Prometheus.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's a separate thing. When I was growing up, it was all about aliens. Everyone loved aliens the most.
Yes.
And I get it, you know, roided up action movie. And in terms of a sequel, I think it's genius for going in a completely different direction.
It's a smart move.
Very smart move.
You've heard the James Cameron story?
No.
When he's pitching it to the to the people in charge, and he just on a chalkboard writes alien and then puts an S on the end and puts a dollar sign through it. And you go, oh, man, like that's that great. Is... You know, sometimes the dick swing is actually impressive.
Yeah, man. James Cameron's got the right to dick swing, I think.
That's a great one.
The guy's been to the bottom of the Mariana Trench. He's pretty cool. But for me, I always preferred the slow burn horror of Alien. And I appreciate the imagery more.
Yep.
Yeah, I just think in terms of this kind of movie, along with The Thing and a couple of others that we've discussed, it's pretty perfect.
Yeah.
And like I say, there's only other... I think I can only think of like two or three other movies that have made me want to throw up because I'm so afraid.
Yeah.
Like I say, I watched it in the middle of the day on a shitty laptop screen and it was too much.
Yeah. Yeah. Feels like we should be making a Shape of Water joke about things that make you throw up. But yeah, this is my favorite because it doesn't have too much exposition and we don't really understand what's going on. Yeah. There's everything from the warning being misinterpreted to the company's secret mission to the space pilot and his ship to the alien itself. There's a lot going on and not a lot's explained. And
yeah, that's great.
Is fantastic.
Well, you're put in the position of one of the crew members.
Yeah.
Utter confusion. Mm. And again, like The Thing, I feel like that's going to be a theme coming back to The Thing. Yeah. It's one of those great films where you can't help but think, who would I be?
Yeah.
How would I be reacting in this situation?
Well, we'll save that for the
I know who that I'd
segment.
Be.
Oh, yeah. I'm ready to go. Oh, just while I think of it, my mum had the best day of anyone this year. She voted Labour on Saturday and then went straight from voting to see The Batman.
Hey.
Loved it.
Hey.
Loved it.
I loved it too, man. Yeah. I went and saw it again.
Yeah. I reckon it's better on the second watch.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Oh, that was so
Patterson's
good.
Her Batman.
Yeah. I think Patterson's my Batman too.
Yeah. I can understand that.
Yeah.
He's great. I love him so much.
I've been watching interviews with him. He just seems
so
fucking cool.
Yeah.
He seems so, like, you can't tell if he's being serious or not. There's some interview he did where they're like, oh, how did you get in the dark mood of Batman? And he's like, oh, you know, in between takes, I'd go to my trailer and play Sonic the Hedgehog 2, and I'd play as Knuckles, the dark hedgehog, and that would really get me into the mindset of, you know, the brooding. It's like, he thinks, like, I think maybe... You could be being serious, but you also could just be trolling everyone. Because there's interviews he's done where he's just made shit up completely.
Yeah.
And it's turned out in the, you know, after the fact to be false. And he's gone, oh, yeah, I just said that to make the interview interesting.
He's funny.
You know what he is? He's a weirdo freak character actor in the body of a hot guy.
Yeah, he's like this generation.
He's so great.
I rewatched Thelma and Louise for the first time in decades, and then watching young Brad Pitt turn up in that, like his first role, and you're going, like I know, like he turns up and you go, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
But the way he acts in that film is not like when you, especially when you look at everyone else who was up for that role, it's like, oh, it's that same thing. You've got a slightly left of center approach to things.
Bent, mate.
And Patterson's, what I like is Patterson's is through that English prism as well, which makes him even slightly stranger.
Yeah, and just the and the integrity to do these just real low budget. You know, scrappy movies.
Yeah.
There was that run of The Rover.
Yeah.
Good Time.
Yeah.
The Lighthouse.
Oh, I just, and you so wouldn't be great. Surprised if after Tenet and The Batman, he goes back to doing
I think he will.
A whole lot of movies that all add up to $10 to make. All right. So this film has a languid start and the dialogue is fascinating upon rewatch because it is really uninspiring. Mm. Like it is so normal. Don't you just wish more films took their time to ground the fantastic in scenes like this?
Hmm. That's why it is scary.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, a lot of the later, not just in this franchise, but a lot of reboots and everything, you know, so many movies open with the blowing their load scene.
Yeah.
You know, the firing 10,000 pixels into your face, and by the time the first 5 minutes is over, you're spent.
Yeah.
You know, I always prefer to be drawn in.
Sorry, I don't know why, but it just took me a second to thoroughly appreciate that imagery. I feel like I need a tissue.
But you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, and I think it's that thing also with the dialogue being as mundane as it is, you truly believe these are just, you know, blue collar workers.
Yeah.
You really believe it.
Yeah.
And so by the time they're in this extraordinary situation, the nausea comes from that they are not, again, similar to the thing, they're not equipped for this.
Oh, they are not equipped.
You know, and I think that's what the difference, I think that's why I love this more than Aliens, because, well, in Aliens, they're commandos.
Yeah.
They got machine guns, they got grenades, they're at least,
yeah,
you know.
Like, they're not equipped to deal with it, but they are equipped to deal with something. But these guys are.
No, they don't even have fucking weapons.
Like, they just want some extra coin for all the work they've been doing.
I mean, Tom Skerritt, he's going down into the what's it called?
Oh, the vents.
The vents with a little pilot light that keeps malfunctioning. I mean, they're not equipped for this.
Yeah. I was about to say, I wrote down here as a note, they might be in a ship about to fight an alien, but these dudes could just be workers at a mine in the middle of the Australian outback, 100%. The way they talk. And it's so, and also... What's fantastic about this slow start is that any presumption you had, like hard now because of all the sequels, but going into this movie blind, you would just subconsciously figure, well, Tom Skerritt will get to the end, mm-hmm. or John Hurt will get to the mm-hmm. end. And that opening, like, you have no idea it's going to be Ripley.
No.
No idea. No. Like now, once again, now it would be, you know, Ripley would be front and center in all the advertising. It's the one thing about, sorry about getting back to the Batman again, but how much better would the film have been?
Mm.
And this is not an actual comment on the film, but if they'd done a Kevin Spacey with Paul Dano, and when you finally saw, oh God, it's just this kind of weak-chinned dude who's the Riddler.
Yeah.
That, but you know, like if I had editing skills, I would re-edit Seven to be a trailer now, and it would open on Kevin Spacey walking in with his hands bleeding, going, and you go, I guess he must be the killer. And also the other thing that I love about the start is, man, is this like one of the ugliest spaceships you've ever seen in a movie?
Yeah.
Like, it's awful.
But it's like an oil rig.
That's all it is. But that's what I love about it. Like, it looks practical.
Yeah.
But it takes the idea of the Star Wars junkyard aesthetic and really digs their hands into it.
Well, you know, I mean, I think, I think Ridley Scott is a good yeoman director.
Yeah.
He's by no means my favorite director. Wouldn't even make my top 20, I don't think.
Yeah.
And I don't think that he would be as revered as he is were it not for the double whammy of Alien and Blade Runner. Just these
two incredibly important movies in my
absolutely
film going
and the
career.
The aesthetic of those two films is just so iconic and so tactile and give you such an idea of a world that exists far beyond the confines of the film that you're watching.
Yeah.
It would be interesting to see if he even had the prolific career that he had.
Yeah.
Had he not made these two films.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a real, I'm here. Like, even though Blade Runner failed at the box office, it is the world building of that.
Yeah.
You know, really gives him that cult status. And you know, once again, we'll talk about this more throughout as we get to each bit, but the sexual imagery is right there from the start. You know, once again, the opening is so peaceful, the sleeping hatches open, and it's like that kind of classic vagina imagery of a lotus flower blooming, you know, and then everyone's kind of like, they don't wake up, they're kind of born.
Yep.
You know, like even John Hurt doing his, oh, my hands, you know, it's like he's got thumbs.
Very, and everything's very pink. And
and the hearing of the online computer, it's mother, which is reassuring, you know. And then, like some mothers. But once again, that subtle opening, it's just so peaceful. Yeah. And even rewatching it this time, I was a bit like, oh, this is quite nice, actually. Oh, hang on a sec. Everything's going to turn bad. All right, let's get to the meat and the potatoes of the film. They receive a message that is interpreted as an SOS, so everyone on the ship decides to go down to check it out. Crazy idea.
Mm.
Shouldn't one person stay behind just to blow that ship out of the air if it's trying to get back onto the main ship?
Like they all when go they down. Land on the planet to yeah. go to sea. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
right,
yeah.
That speaks to me about what you were saying earlier, about they're just not equipped. Like they're just not quite that logical about what they should be doing.
No. And I can't remember the character's name, the other female character.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I'm drawing a blank. I'll look it up.
She seems to be the only one reacting with any kind of rationality as to realizing that they are out of their depth. Like when they arrive at that
Lambert.
Weird... Lambert. When they arrive at that weird donut ship.
Yeah.
I mean, spoiler alert, she's the character that I relate to. You know, that real like, let's get out of here. Well, isn't good.
I think it's both women, actually, because Ripley's the only one who's like, no, this is how we deal with things, and it's everyone going. So Lambert's kind of the emotional, mm-hmm. and Ripley is the intellectual.
Yeah, but I mean, they seem to be the only two, you know, the only two that aren't defaulting into the machismo male, you know, stereotypical male kind of, you know, like Grand Explorer, let's go and check it out. I mean, the move that John Hurt makes going down into those vessels is ridiculous. What are you doing? You're in the middle of a fucking, you've literally just been exposed to the idea that aliens are real.
Yeah.
You're on some bizarre ship that's clearly technologically far beyond anything you can comprehend, and there's organic matter that seems to be alive, and you're sticking your face into it?
You know, absolutely. I reckon...
What are you doing?
Look, I would have gone for the Wanda. I would have gone into the ship. I would have seen the space jockey. And after I clean the shit out of my spacesuit, I just would have left the other two.
Oh,
I would have just wandered off.
When I was a teenager, there was this house about a block from our school, and we called it Crud House. It was this like monster house, terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, it was probably built in the 1940s. So it had all, it literally looked like a stereotypical haunted house. And all around it were piles of perfectly sorted junk. So there was, terrifying. So there was like a pile of single A batteries. And then there were stacks of newspapers.
Yes.
And then there was the pile of dog food cans. So it was clearly a hoarder that was like cataloging all of their junk.
Yeah.
And in the center of the kitchen, and we only knew this from peeking through the windows. And at the center of the kitchen, there was this giant 1950s green refrigerator. And the talk of the school was that there was a head in the refrigerator.
Amazing. Amazing.
And one afternoon, me and three friends decided we're going to go into Crud House and poke around. And I got about four steps in before every molecule of blood turned cold.
Hang on, did you, like, where was the person who lived there?
There was no person that lived there. That's what freaked us out. It was like, is there a person that lives there? Is there not a, we never saw a person that lived there. The house seemed abandoned.
And the door was just open.
The door was unlocked, and there was always this temptation to go in whenever we were scoping it out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so we'd see, and then it was like, aah! And we'd like all run away.
Yeah.
And then one afternoon we decided we're going in, and, you know, it was that. It was like my blood turned cold and I turned around and ran for my life.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, it was a silly house that, you know, had been abandoned, full of junk. But it was like, you know, is it a ghost? Is there a demon in there?
I know exactly.
What the fuck?
I know exactly what would have happened. I would be sitting here now just scrolling through Twitter and they would say, how old were you?
Oh, like 14, 13. Yeah.
Mystery solved. 14-year-old Ben Elwood disappeared on this day and we found him in the fridge.
In the fridge.
Sliced and diced.
Well, my friend's big mission was to get into the kitchen, past all the piles of junk, and open the fridge to prove whether or not there was a head in there or not. But, you know, it was like...
Did he get in?
He got in and opened the fridge. Of course, there was no head in there.
What was in there?
I don't know. Probably cans. Right. I don't remember. But there was definitely no head. But,
boom.
You know, I still remember that that surge of fear like it was, you know, yesterday.
Yeah.
It was so overwhelming and all-encompassing, and just that involuntary action of turning around and running for my life. And so watching this, you know, where it's like, okay, you're on a fucking planet.
You're on a moon.
You're on a moon.
Yeah.
The weather's terrible.
You
know, it's debatable whether you're even going to lift off.
Yeah.
Now you've found a spaceship. You didn't even know 5 minutes ago that aliens are real, but you've found some bizarre craft. You're in the craft. Now you've seen the fossilized body of a space jockey.
Yeah.
Now you've fallen into a pit, but the whole time you never question what his motivation. Like, there's that moment in Prometheus, which is analogous, where the guy is, I think it's some kind of serpent.
Yep.
And he's like going, and I remember that at the time, everyone laughing, going, what an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, that would never happen. He's a biologist, right? Yeah. And I do remember in that moment going, that's stupid. In this version, you don't, for some reason, there's a path of logic to his character and to the way it's all unfolding.
Yeah.
That when he does make that bizarre move of leaning over into an egg that's just opened up.
Well, you know,
you buy it.
Well, you know, the mistake in Prometheus is that guy shown to be scared before,
yeah,
and then he sees the serpent, yes, and he says, "Oh, this is beautiful." And that's right. That is illogical.
Right. Yes, yes, yes.
Whereas this guy is just like, "Oh, what's going this on here?
Cool.
Oh, this is weird. Oh, look at this. Oh, geez, looks like the ribs are blown out."
Yeah.
I've fallen down. Oops, okay, no, I'm all good. Oh, these kind of look like eggs. Looks like something's moving in the egg. No, it's forever. So I had here, the first time we see the crashed spaceship is one of the oh my moments in cinema.
Yeah.
And once again, had kind of been briefly described to me by mum, but still did not land the way it did until I saw it. And
it was such a bizarre design.
It's such a bizarre design, right? And that's part of what really sticks with you. And back when you only had the opportunity to see a film once, you know, once upon a time, you only got to see a film once and hopefully you got to see it again. That scene had sparked my imagination to such an extent, I remembered it incorrectly. I remembered that there, and I think maybe because I'd seen some of Geiger's artwork in other places as well, I remembered that there were pyramids nearby and hieroglyphics and things like that. But that was all from seeing it at a young age on video and just the imagination just filling in some gaps there.
Yeah.
The design is... And that's the way it's kind of, you know, holding up, but, you know, you feel like it's atrophied and, you know, like, well, like you could just go, hey, what's this little bit? And, and it would just fall apart.
Well, also, I think, you know, even though you don't have an engineer's mind, you look at something like a flying saucer and it kind of looks like a pie tin or a frisbee or something like that. So you can kind of extrapolate out how that could fly. You look at this weird donut with rounded edges, and it's like, how the fuck does that thing even get into the air?
Yeah.
There's an uncanny valley-ness to the whole thing that is very unsettling.
And the inside looks, it's so wet.
Organic.
Oh.
It looks organic.
Oh.
Yeah.
So the next bit I had here was the space jockey was also a big part of why I loved the film. It had two massive impacts on me. One when I was young and one when I was much older. It was one of the first instances in a film that I became obsessed and loved theorizing about it. The idea of what the space jockey was. So that when I was younger, that was like, that just sat in my head for decades because I couldn't even work out like what was going on with the face.
Yeah.
Like to me, it was some kind of elephant.
Yeah.
Kind of being.
Yeah.
And then I was like, is that a gun? Like, is that a gun thing that it's sitting in? Or was that the thing that it was sending out? Like, I just didn't know.
Yeah,
and
I loved
theorizing about it. And then, and the size and the shape and blah, blah, blah. Everything about it.
Yeah.
And then it had a massive impact on me decades later when they explained in Prometheus what it was. I was just a bit bummed out.
Yeah, of course, because the explanation always is terrible.
And that's where it influenced me, where it's like, you know, like...
Not everything needs an answer.
So I was talking to someone at work, a young cinephile. She loves films. Mm. She's great. and a lot of the movies she loves, you know, you really understand. And she was, it was interesting. She said that she can't get into David Lynch films, can't get into Pedro Almodovar films. And it was really telling, which is not incorrect or correct, but it was just telling because it's like, oh, you kind of like your films to tell you what they are. And
yes.
I think we like films that leave some room for us to have a think.
Yeah.
And
that changes.
Yeah.
That changes with age.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, I think maybe when you're younger, you do kind of want some answers. It's one of the reasons why I was convinced. Like when the trailer for Prometheus came out, there was just a little shot in the trailer, one of the great trailers, where you see the helmet taking form, so that sparked the very young part of me.
Yeah.
And then you saw the film and you were like, this was, as everyone knows, I watch it once every 18 months, 2 years to see if it's improved.
And it doesn't.
It doesn't.
It doesn't.
I keep giving it crap.
But it's, I mean, I think that's a trend, you know, because there's that real trend in that era of film, the franchise reboots and all the rest, where it was suddenly answering questions, you know, that either no one asked, or that the answer could never match how great your imagination of the thing was.
Well, then also the weird thing was it didn't quite match up with Alien. So it was like, well, why did you answer questions that don't quite... it's like someone said, tell me... Oh, so you love sport. Who's your favourite basketball team? And you go, oh, well, you know, I just really, really love Steph Curry. And you go, right, so, sorry, which team do you love? Oh, the Lakers. So my question was the Lakers. So so the question was, what happened to that space jockey? Oh, we'll show you what the space jockey is. And it's like, well, that's not the space jockey. That's some other guy who from the same race. Like, it doesn't.
Oh, is it? Yeah, so I don't remember that much about.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Oh, okay, it doesn't actually answer.
That's not the ship.
Oh,
do you know what I mean? So that's part of the annoyance of Prometheus is that you kind of, like, if you're going to do it,
right.
Do it. But instead.
Yeah, right. I thought it was the same thing. I've seen the movie once.
Yeah, but that's part of the part of the frustration.
Yeah.
It's like, not only did you kind of answer the question, but you didn't really answer it the proper question, which is, anyway.
What about just new mysteries?
What about new mysteries? You know what? make that movie, remake that for, like, if they'd made that for, if that was a new Ridley Scott movie that had no connection. Like, you take all the alien part out of it and turn it into something else. Probably stands on its own 2 feet.
Yeah.
But it's the trying to, here's an idea. Oh, great idea. And now we're going to put Alien in there.
You know. And the extra sin of it is that it, for anyone who's younger, who has the misfortune of seeing Prometheus first, their viewing of Alien is then completely perverted.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the way Peter Jackson, after he released the Hobbit movies, you know, because of some stupid marketing scheme, decided that, oh, no, there was always meant to be 6 movies and you should always watch the Hobbit movies before you watch Lord... No! Don't do that.
Right.
Don't do that.
Right.
That'll fuck Lord of the Rings up so badly for... You don't fucking need all these awful callbacks to the Lord of the Rings movies that are wedged into The Hobbit to make seem like they were always interconnected when they're not.
Right.
It's hideous.
Right.
But, you know, like, I know so many kids that have, you know, oh, yeah, I prefer The Hobbit because I saw it first and Lord of the Rings just seemed to be a follow-up to the... Oh, no.
What are you doing? What are you doing? That's disappointing.
Mm.
It's so funny. Like, we've talked about this before, but I saw Lord of the Rings at the cinema and really enjoyed it.
Yes.
And then I saw the first trailer for The Hobbit and I was like, I'm good.
Don't ever.
I'm really good.
Don't ever, unless you want to watch it like Zack Snyder's Justice League as like a kind of hilarious hate watch. I would not recommend those films.
This is probably the weirdest thing that I'll ever say about Zack Snyder's Justice League. Yeah, but that was only 4 hours.
It was only 1/3 of the length of the Hobbit trilogy.
So did I tell you that I went to the doctor? Mm. And so I've been having trouble with high sugar levels and we just haven't been able to quite work it out. Anyway, to make a long story short, we've gotten on top of it and really, really nailed it, really, really put it in a good place, and it's best news I've had in ages. And then, but because of it, I seem to just have this excess energy, so I'm not really sleeping very well. I'm not tired, but it'd be nice to be able to get 6 hours, six and a half hours. So anyway, my doctor said, just go to the chemist and get some melatonin. And I walked in and I asked to buy some melatonin, and the woman behind the counter said, how old are you? And I said, I'm 49. She said, oh, you're too young for this. And I went, don't say another word. Do not say another word, because this might be the last time in the history of my life that I hear the magical words, you're too young. And she kept trying to talk to me. I said, no, 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 don't ruin this moment. And the chemist behind her was laughing really hard. They were both laughing because they could see me going, I'll be fine. No, 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 no. Don't need a prescription. I'll be good. So this, I don't know about you, but the scene with the eggs, I feel like you have already answered this question, still packs a wallop after all these years. And like, it's kind of been seen a lot now and it still freaks me out. And here's a little hammo fact. While I was writing this question for you and thinking of that scene, I shivered.
Yeah, it's visceral. Again, it's the wetness. And it's the visceral quality of an actual physical thing.
Yeah.
And not a CG bleh.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, when you see that, I mean, later on when he's lying there and you see the cord tighten around his, I mean, it's awful. And the disgusting fingernails on the thing, like it's really unpleasant.
Oh, mate.
It's an unpleasant creature.
The tightening of the coil makes it really, like, makes it evil. Like, the other thing is just like, but this is like, no, mate, this is fucking
mine. Yeah. It's malevolent.
Oh.
And there's like, again, like a weird kind of sadomasochistic sense of ownership.
Yeah.
You know, like the tightening of the of the choke chain.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah. It's like watching a young male comedian do overtime on stage. It's just mine.
As the mic cord grips around his fist.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm never getting on. Why did I say I wanted to do this gig? Early sign that Ripley is the only person who should live. She's the only grown-up in wanting to follow protocols. A bit unfair. Lambert should live as well. Here's a game for you. What happens to the story if they do what she says?
If they go into quarantine?
Yeah, like if they don't let her come in, what's the alternate movie?
Oh, the thing eventually bursts out of his stomach anyway, and they get in, and they get killed, and then they just blast them out into space, right?
Mm.
While screaming at how horrible and high-fiving Ripley about her great...
Oh yeah,
a great foresight. Mate,
she gets all the promotions. Yeah. So I
can you imagine if that thing had been in?
Oh yeah, because this is such a great film to engage with and think about. So I came up with so in my alternate movie, this whole part is a prologue. So they wait and they watch and they see the alien pop out and then they just fucking kick him out, like just leave him there. Spray.
Of course, yes.
They clean up the bottom of the hatch and everything. They get into the ship. They fly off, and then we cut to 7 years later, and it is Ian Holm, Ash, leading a team of scientists and soldiers to go find more of go and find the eggs.
That's great.
And it's a cross between the first two films.
Fantastic.
Anyway,
Ash is.
Oh, man, we'll get into Ash. Ooh. Yeah. Let's look. Sorry, like there's just some other creepier things to talk about before we get to how creepy Ash is. The face hugger is like a giant hand. The way it grips the face, more sexual imagery. Once we realise it has pushed something down his throat. Now, something I always forget to talk about is Ash has an idea that there is something down there, and deliberately misreads the message as an SOS. Or, so I just wanted to see what you thought. Mm. Is the company he is working for already knows about the derelict ship? Or does his plan kick into gear when he realizes that they found something?
I think that he's aware that they're there to collect some kind of specimen.
Right.
I mean, doesn't he kind of explicitly come out with that?
Yeah, once again, because there's this vagueness. So the thing is that Dallas says that he replaced the regular science officer last before. Minute. So that makes me wonder, if someone else picked up on the message. And they went, oh, we think there might be something
down there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, so, that's how I interpreted it. Yeah, and then he's acting right. hell-shifty when they're out on the planet.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the move to just override Ripley's authority and smash the button and let them in.
Yeah.
I think he's fully... Whether but or not he knows what's going to happen.
No, yeah. No, I don't think that's...
But I think there's also, A, there's a lack of fear because he's a robot.
Yeah.
A robot. And two, there's a lack of fear because he's not biological. Or at least not, you know, a biology that we understand. I mean, there seems to be some biology there with all that fucking milk that he's drinking.
Oh, my God. We'll get into that as well. But
he definitely needs his lactic acid.
Yeah, far out. What are you doing, mate? What are you doing? Just have some yogurt. Like, you don't have to drink all that milk. It's disgusting. That's part of the... that first time you watch it, you're so overwhelmed because it's been so... At the beginning, and then you go, fuck, what's going on with that alien? And it's like, oh, what's going on with that ship? And then it's like, oh, my God, that thing's on his face. And then it's like, it's easy to kind of forget. Like, Ash can slip through the cracks of the story.
No, I was watching him very closely this time. And there's little things, you know, like when he's studying a computer screen with some results on it and Ripley comes in and he just very, you know, subtly closes the screen.
Yeah, yeah.
No, he's definitely got his agenda bubbling away.
Hang on. Let's jump ahead and we'll talk about Ash now.
Yeah.
So when we speak of the movie, it feels like this scene is forgotten about, but it was just so shocking to me the first time I saw it, which is Ash is an awful character. And when you watch the performance closely, as you said, on subsequent repeats, he's the quiet male who appears to acquiesce to everyone around him, but is secretly the worst person on the ship. So which is more horrifying? The revelation that he's a robot or when they bring him back online? It's like, oh, God, this can't get any worse.
The scene where he's pinwheeling around, puking up milk and everything is as horrific as the chest-bursting scene for me. It is so awful.
I totally agree.
And all those disgusting tapioca balls that are coming out of him. It's like, yuck.
Yeah. Sorry for anyone who might be eating tapioca balls at the moment, but... Ben is correct. Yeah, it's so, and it's hysterical.
It's hysterical.
Well.
Hysteria,
like when it starts losing it. Mm. Also, more sexual imagery. Trying to shove a rolled up porn magazine down Ripley's throat, and then when he is,
what's that move?
Oh, it's so.
Like surely, like if your aim is to kill her, surely there's a more efficient way to do it. Your robot. What's going on?
No, he's just going to shove it down her throat.
It's like, very fucking odd, right?
Oh, it's awful. Everything about this movie is
awful. It's a violation. There's so much violation in it.
That's what they should have called it. Violation of the characters, of your senses, of your dreams. And then I also wrote, and then when he's defeated, he jizzes everywhere.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think Ash leans into a trope, which is really effective, which is the scariest thing in the universe is something that looks just like us, which gets back to Invasion of the Body Snatchers as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
All right, I have a question for you. You're one of the people on the ship, and you see that alien on your co-worker's face, and then you see that the alien lets it go. Do you sit down to eat with him? Do you keep him at a distance but are still friendly? Or do you find a way to lock him in an airlock at any given point so you can shoot him off into space?
See.
Oh, man. Get the fuck out. Like, I know you're John Hurt, but you, like, I am just not accepting this.
No.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I can't, I'm terrible with all the names. I didn't do what I did with the thing and remember all the names. Which one? There's the two handymen, Harry Dean Stanton.
Yeah, there's Parker, which is Yaphet Kotto.
Okay, yeah, Parker. Parker's the one that flat out says, put him in fucking cryo.
Yes.
Let's get him, like, what are we doing?
Yeah, so once...
That's the solution. You put him in cryo immediately.
Yeah. Workers of the world unite. It's the proletariat who just comes up with the practical solution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even after the thing comes off his face, yeah, great, I'm glad you're back, but no.
Yeah.
I mean, they know that the thing laid something in him, right?
Well, they
know something shoved down his fucking throat.
Well, but their thought is that that's to keep him breathing, to keep him alive. But so I don't think they do know that something's been laid in him because I think they do something about it.
Again, it's that thing of like, it's very easy in retrospect to go, well, of course it laid something in him, but pre...
Yeah, but, you know, first time you come across something like this, it's like when you were a kid and you stepped on a spider and then you went, why are there thousands of baby spiders? You know? once again, because this movie's so engaging, I came up with another movie version idea of this film. Yeah. So imagine they listen to Yaphet Kotto and they put him in suspended animation and then they take him back to Earth. And then that movie's a scorcher as well.
Totally, yeah. There's a great guy, Collative Learning. He does a lot of great deep dive videos on YouTube.
Right. You sent him me stuff of his before?
No, I've sent you Thomas Flight stuff before. But Collative Learning's, I mean, he goes to some pretty crazy places.
Great.
With his theories. He's got some great thing theories. And his pitch for a thing sequel was The Thing Gets to Earth and gets into the underground.
Oh, it gets into the city?
No, but it gets into the underground tunnels under the White House.
Oh, great. Yeah, that's insane. I love it. Like, that's the sequel to The Thing we needed.
Yeah.
Like, if alien things.
Yeah. And, you know, and high-level government officials.
Yeah. Great. Finishes with The Thing on a nuke flying into space.
Yeah. Woo-hoo!
Yeah. The inverse of Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah.
After all the chestburster scenes as well, like, this one still holds up, doesn't it?
That's horrific.
Like, it's still horrific.
Well, because he's in agony. It's awful.
It's awful John Hurt. Death. And it's John Hurt.
I love John Hurt.
He looked all peaceful when he was waking up.
Yeah. It's horrific.
At least he gets a nice meal before he dies.
You've seen Spaceballs, right? Where he reprises this role.
Oh, no. I've never seen Spaceballs.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I just realized that then.
Spaceballs was easily my favorite movie from about 7 to 9. My favorite, favorite movie. I loved it so much. And it was so funny.
Is that with Pizza the Hut?
Pizza the Hut.
Yep.
And I saw Spaceballs before I ever saw Star Wars, before I ever saw Alien, before I saw any of these. And John Hurt, spoiler alert for the Spaceballs, but there's a scene where they go to a diner.
Yeah.
And John Hurt's at the counter eating and he's playing this character.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, like the thing bursts out of his chest, except this time instead of running away, it dons a little boater hat and a cane and recreates the frog from the Warner Brothers cartoons.
Oh, my baby. Yeah. It's really funny. So, did I tell you that Ross Noble got to meet and hang out with Mel Brooks?
You told me this.
Yeah. I may as well. I haven't told it on the podcast.
No, I don't think so.
So he was doing Young Frankenstein as the musical. Mm. And there was just something, like the show was going well, but there was just something that they weren't quite getting right. So they brought Mel Brooks over. Mm. And so the two, he told me lots of stories, but the two I'll share was, one is, apart from just being a delightful human being, Mel would always insist on getting the check. And he'd insist, but every time he'd get the check in front of everyone, he'd look and pretend to have a heart attack and go, oh, like, so every time. And so, like, that is, like, it, of course, Mel Brooks has commitment to a gag. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, that would just entertain me every time I saw it.
It's such an old Jewish grandfather joke as
well. Yeah, it's like, oi. But then the second thing was, you know, he'd wear a hat and glasses because he's recognized a lot. You know, Ross is mega famous in the UK. And then one day they were all sitting down and these fans of Ross came up and they were like, oh, we love you, Ross. You're fantastic, Ross. You're the best, Ross. And Ross was like, oh, yeah, thank you. That's so nice. And then Mel Brooks has whipped off his hat and his glasses and said, but what about me? Just the best.
I think that's the title of his autobiography. It's all about me.
So good. The Harry Dean Stanton scene, looking for the alien, taking in the water before being killed.
That's, I think, the most terrifying sequence in cinema that I've ever experienced.
Yeah.
And I remember when I first saw it, and I remember talking to people about this scene going, it's 7 minutes of this guy looking for the fucking cat, and you know the whole time that he's going to get killed. And in the end...
And there's no music.
No music. And in the end, you're not even scared about the alien coming out anymore. You just want it to be over. Like, it's not even about, oh, is it going to leap out? It's like, just leap out. Just fucking kill him. Let's go.
Yeah.
And I remember on this rewatch, you know, you were talking before about misremembering things or the way your imagination, you know, extrapolates stuff. And I this time I was like, I bet it doesn't go for 7 minutes.
Right.
It probably goes for 2 minutes, but, you know, 7 minutes.
Yeah.
It's 7 minutes of this guy just walking. Here, kitty, kitty, kitty.
Oh, yeah.
Here, kitty.
Yeah.
Kitty, kitty. Oh, yuck.
And by this stage as well, like, you once again, on your first watch, it's like, oh no, it's massive.
Yeah.
Like it's grown really quickly.
Yeah. It's awful.
Him looking up. Now, you know, what you just said then is perfect, which is you are so relieved when he's finally
because it's not even like a blah when it finally comes and gets him. It just it unfolds quite you know, almost like dance like.
Yeah.
You know, it just kind of unfolds and there it is.
Yeah.
That's not the scary part. It's the 6.5 minutes before he gets taken out that is just that was the sequence the first time I watched it where I was like, fuck this movie. Yeah. I feel sick. This is awful.
Well, let's talk about all the death scenes. And so let's rank them. I know I hate rankings, but just as in I mean more
but under what metric?
Like the ones that made you feel the most sick.
Oh, and then the Tom Skerritt one is just, I mean, that was probably the only moment on this rewatch, because I know this movie very well.
Yeah.
That made me audibly yell. Even though I knew exactly, as he's turning, I'm like, I know what happened, and still, when it happens, it's like, fuck, no! And again, it's that mounting, you know. Get out of there! Get out of there!
And, the audio in this film is phenomenal. Even the noises of the vents being closed is a perfect noise. And I don't know why, but it freaks me out that they don't close. We never see them close fully. Like there's always just that little hole there.
Yeah, like there's a weakness that it can maybe penetrate or get through. And then he plays it so well in, you can like, it's such a great piece of acting because he's not freaking out, but he plays it just enough that you can tell he's caught the fear really fucking badly.
Yes.
He's very aware that he is stuck in a claustrophobic space. He cannot get out. And there's a quality to his acting in that makes it so much more effective than if he was like, it's just that wave of fear that goes through him. He's like, this isn't good. I got to get out of here right now.
Well, it's funny. You kind of, his character does a lot of things that make you understand why he's the captain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if he does, he's a good captain. He has compassion for his fellow person that he's looking after. He's the one who goes in, like...
It's an awful scene.
Hey, you know this thing that's that burst out of our friend's chest and is now going around and eating all of the crew? How do you feel about going into that venture with the... What did you say? The Bic lighter? And some fly spray. How do you feel about that? And I'd say, why don't we just, like...
Why don't we all just kill ourselves now? This is horrible.
Oh, I would have just been like, let's get into
get the fuck out of here.
Let's get into these ships and get it. Like, let's leave.
It's awful.
It's his now. That's how I feel when a big spider lives in my apartment. Well, I'll just pack up and I'll leave. It's yours. You can pay rent. Fuck you. That's what I would have done. Man, going into the ventilation shafts, like, you know what? Let's not rank them. They're all awful.
Those two in particular are... Yeah. Really,
but then if you take into the John Hurt death scene, that's awful.
Yeah.
And then you know, Lambert. Like I
feel Lambert, the weird sexual imagery that comes with that, the way the tail starts going up into her inner thigh. It's like, what are you doing? what's wrong with you?
Oh my lord!
Is it not enough to just terrify them and eat them? Are you going to violate them as well?
Well, it's what's kind of fascinating about this one is by the time we get to Aliens, they're more. You know, it's like insects, they're leaping out. But this one has in this film, this thing has a curiosity.
It has a malevolent sensuality.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a creep.
Oh, it's like if one of my female friends said, hey, I've been dating this guy and he's turned into an alien, I'd go, oh, yeah, no, I've seen this.
Yeah.
I've seen this in the film.
Even at the end when it's hiding in the little escape pod.
Just having a little nap.
Just having, like, the way it's all curled up, you know, like, and spooned with the wall.
I've just been eating so much.
Yuck.
I'm just going to have a little nap and just look at you. And then when the steam sprayed on, it's like, hey.
Yeah.
Hey. What are you doing? I'm having a little nap.
It's an awful thing.
My God. All of the stuff with the... you know when you think, how much more can I love Ripley? And then it's like, oh, no, she's going to save the cat.
Yep.
You go, great, you know. Yep. All of that scene of setting up the once again, the chunkiness of setting up the destruction, the cylinders coming out. I've
forgotten about that.
Yeah.
No, turn it off. Too late.
Yeah.
Oh, now I've got, you know, that you know, Mad Maxing having to double back.
Yeah. Great.
But, and again, the saving the cat, you know, that's such a human thing.
Yes.
You know, if we've seen anything from these Lismore floods.
Yeah.
You know, that seemed to be people, they didn't give a fuck about anything but the animals.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, no one saved even photo albums. It was the dog, the cat, the chickens.
You know, I heard a story about a Ukrainian woman who was, she just realized what was going on and closed up her apartment and was leaving and then went, I'm never coming back here, and went back up, got her cats, and then left. You know, it is...
Yeah.
It is phenomenal, not to, you know, attribute something terrible in the real world to this, but it is a very human.
Yeah, no, it's just moment. it's a character trait that's depicted in the movie that resonates because it's true of humanity.
The ending is the ending, and I don't think there's necessarily. We don't need to unpack the, you know, setting up the charges and all of that kind of stuff. But what I thought we could, before we get to the last of our segments, I thought, how do you read the alien as a metaphor? And I thought, you know, because you can look at it in a few ways. And I'll share my reading with you, which is definitively influenced by the times we live in. But to me, and the reason I'm bringing it up is because I feel like we just kind of touched on it, but the alien is the ultimate aggressive male, and that is why it is perfect that Ripley is the one that can beat it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Look, because there's the part where Ash is kind of talking about it just as the perfect organism.
Yeah.
And
that's creepy.
Yeah. Cause he seems turned on by it.
Yeah.
Which is covered strange for a robot.
It covered
it. Covered in sperm.
It's tapioca balls. Tapioca jizz.
But yeah, I'm going
to bet on that in the Melbourne Cup.
And I think there is something to that, that it is just an organism. But look, maybe there's a project, but I don't think so. Because I think that I think it's quite explicit in the way it moves and the way it stalks and the way it has a malevolence to it that goes beyond just an animal trying to survive or an animal trying to feed.
Well, that's what we were saying. There does seem to be a malevolence to it. Yeah.
And again, that's that kind of sexual malevolence. Like there's, it's not like a, there's a panther loose in the zoo and it's pouncing on people and tearing them apart.
Yeah.
This is something very evil.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a rabid dog sticking its tail between a woman's legs to go, hello.
Yeah.
It's fucked.
There's a relishing that it takes from what it's doing.
Yeah.
I think we both watched the theatrical cut.
Yes.
There's that really famous scene in the director's cut where Ripley goes down into the... Have you ever seen the director's cut?
Tell me what the scene is.
Where she goes into the bottom of the ship. And
by the
she
way,
finds...
I love that we never talk about it, but we always default to the theatrical cut. Of course,
always. Yeah. Not always, but on this...
Mostly.
In the director's cut, there's a sequence where she goes, some room of the ship, and she finds all of the people that the aliens...
Oh, yes,
and they're all, you know, basically in some giant...
Webbed up,
cocooned, kept alive. Kill me!
Yeah. Yeah, it's already started the next cycle of making the eggs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm glad they took that out.
I'm glad they took that out too. And it's funny because you don't want to project, you know, because there's heaps of parasitoid wasps that do similar stuff.
Yeah.
You know, there's a whole species that can only lay their eggs within the living body of other creatures.
Yep.
You know, like...
parasitoid footballers. Yeah.
Parasitoid wasps will keep spiders and roaches alive.
Yeah.
You know, and only eat the soft bits like the legs. And seriously.
Because
they're, and then when they're young hatch, it's like, here you go, you got a meal. Blah, and they'll just then finally.
It's Jeff.
They'll finally put the thing out of its misery. You know, and it's very easy to go, that is fucking evil. But it's not. Like, there's no malevolence in the wasp.
Yeah.
It's just doing what it does. Like, I really don't believe that a wasp with a brain the size of an atom is there going,
Yeah.
Like, it's just doing what evolutionarily works
yeah.
For that organism. But I don't think it's the same for the alien.
No, there is something.
There's some, there's a dick-shaped brain in that dick-shaped skull.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah. Look, it is awful. There's something that I only noticed this time. I think I realized this on a subconscious level when I first saw it as a kid, but was only aware of it this time. Sigourney Weaver is quite androgynous
yes.
all the way through the film. Of course, we're reminded of her femaleness by the rescuing of the cat, which is a motherly action. But we also see her getting changed out of the work clothes that are sexless. And I remember as a kid, it was quite a shock to see how feminine she was underneath, which is a really important
yeah.
scene. Like, at the time, I think maybe in my first readings, I felt like that was gratuitous. But now I actually see it as being important.
Yeah, no, I think it's vital in that yeah. moment. Yeah, especially if you interpret this alien as a malevolent kind of, you know, the more malevolent side of male energy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good reminder that she's a woman going up against a big body cock having a nap on the escape ship. Just a great ending.
Great ending.
And
satisfying.
Really satisfying. And then
get
she's
that fucking thing out of here.
And then, you know, you look at her asleep with the cat. Like, I remember the first time I watched it, I was like, is that cat then going to... Yeah, do you know what I mean? But
Do you remember if you thought that it was over once she got in that escape pod?
Because
again, everything you know about tropes of movies now, like, it's clearly not over.
Yeah.
Like, sure, there's got to be the denouement with the alien.
Yeah.
But I wonder, you know, back then, you know, because they really spend a long time with her yeah. kind of chilling out.
And then I guess it's all over. It feels like it's the bookend of the start, which yeah. is very, so now we're going to end in a calm place. Oh, there it is.
Yeah, it's still here. Like, fucking,
yeah. Oh, God. What a great film.
And that's a trick that they play a lot throughout the film, the design of the ship's walls looking like alien body parts. There's a lot yeah. of scenes where it's like, fuck, is that? Oh, no, that's
yeah.
not it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got a kind of natural camouflage. I tell you what, though, even though this is my favourite one, I'm suddenly going, I wouldn't mind watching Aliens.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It really inspires you to go and check that
out. Yeah.
Also, one of the all-time underrated performances by Paul Reiser.
Great performance.
You know?
Yeah.
Mad About You. I'm furious.
And one of the great puppets of all time, film puppets,
oh,
that
yeah.
alien queen.
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking masterpiece.
Yeah, all great.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to the last of the segments. Segment who and how, which character do you think you would be and how would you react in their place?
Oh, I've already forgotten her name.
Lambert.
Lambert. That's yep. the one I relate to the most in yep. terms of just that. You know, I'd like to think that, and I think when I have been confronted with the situations, I actually don't crumble.
Yeah.
But I think it would be very different being that isolated. I think that adds a level to it where it's like the full realization of your helplessness in that situation.
Yeah.
And I just feel like I would.
Yeah.
Fuck. Yeah.
I had that with someone at work recently when I realized, oh, this is only the start of the day. We'll save that one for off the mic.
I know who you're talking about.
I'd be the space jockey. No matter how much I explain myself, nobody listens and then they interpret me incorrectly. But at least in this, I'd be dead, so who'd give a shit? It's like, oh, well, fuck it. I tried to warn you not to come down here, you fucking...
What part of my exploded mummified chest made you think this was
a good telling
idea?
I was telling you from the start, this is how it was going to play out, and you didn't listen to me, but I'm dead. I don't give a shit. I'm a space jockey. Segment zero charisma. Who has the least charisma in this? For me, it's the face hugger.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
It
yeah.
still creeps me out
yeah,
after
awful.
All these years.
It's awful. It's the fingernails.
It's the fingernails. It's the fucking fingernails.
Like, if they were just kind of rods, you'd be like, yeah, all right, they're legs. But the fact that it's a hand.
Yeah, I've got a good squid bit for you about that, so we'll get to that in a sec. Segment, better or worse.
Mm-hmm.
Ruin or improve this movie with one decision.
It's a very practical thing for me. Look, it's a fairly flawless movie. There's only two shots of the alien where I'm like,
it's a bit too much.
It's clearly a guy in a suit. And it's like right towards the end.
Oh, so you'd so to
I just make, take I just take two shots out of the movie
and make the better, and, movie better.
And, well, just to keep that mystery. I think the most you should ever see full front of the alien is that like blink and you miss it shot in the vents. Yeah. There's a shot right at the end where he's got his arms outstretched.
Yeah,
and he's like coming towards, and it really looks like, you know,
right.
Grizzly Adams,
you know,
Plan 9 from Outer Space kind of shit.
Well, you know what's funny? I think when you back in the day when you only saw movies now and again, you don't really remember any of those scenes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So I think that is a being able to watch it all the time.
Yeah, sure. Where,
you know, that's the only bad thing about loving certain movies is that if over time you do start to pick out, like, it's like sometimes if you love a film, one of the best things you can do is not watch it for a while.
That's what I'm like with Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah,
I've only seen it twice. I think that is one of the greatest movies of all time.
Yeah,
and a younger version of me would put it on every couple of months, and I'm like, you know what?
Yep.
Every couple of years.
Little
get
treat.
That buzz.
Little treat.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, I get that. That's perfect. I'd ruin the movie by making it G-rated, and in the birthing scene, I'd have E.T.'s finger coming out.
Very good.
Segment, where are we now? How close are we to the technology in the film? This is from Milken Institute Review in 2021. We're on the cusp of mining on the moon, Mars, and asteroids. In 2020, NASA awarded contracts to four companies to extract small amounts of lunar geography by 2024. Jeff Bezos, nice guy, has envisioned heavy industry moving to space and Earth becoming a residential area, considering the vast amounts of resources that are scarce and valuable back on Earth. There are issues, though, including that since space doesn't belong to anyone, doesn't it? Traditional methods of resource allocation, property rights and trade is difficult to traverse. They also must create a viable industry that will find a way to create huge amounts of energy to return materials to Earth. The United States at this point looks like the front runner with the Artemis program to lead a multinational consortium back to the moon. They have also adopted the world's first space resources law, recognizing the property rights of private companies and individuals to materials gathered in space. Luxembourg and the United Arab Emirates are also racing to codify space resources laws of their own. China views space resource development as a national priority as part of their strategy to challenge the US economic and security primacy in space. Russia, Japan, India, and the European Space Agency all harbor space mining ambitions of their own. You know what? The suggestion of this segment was a great idea, but apart from that one thing where drones were shooting pellets into the ground, it's a pretty depressing segment, isn't it?
Every time you read stuff out, I'm like, you know what? I'm really glad I'm going to be dead in 30 years. This is fucking, I don't want to live on this, you know, weird sci-fi dystopia.
Yep.
Awful.
All right, I called you about this last night. This might be a new segment. I just came up with this. Maybe it's a now and again segment if we... And this was inspired that we have seen the Alien Predator movies. So this is franchise crossover. So what would you have Alien crossover with? I have a mildly dumb but interesting one, and then I have a bonus one for you.
I would cross it over with two of our favorite films so far.
Well, I wonder if you've on
Alien E.T.
Craig.
You have pure evil mixed with pure good. Who wins out?
So does E.T.'s magic finger is the only thing that can calm the alien?
Yeah, it calms him down. Yeah, yeah. And his little mouth in his mouth starts to glow.
Yeah. Imagine Elliot and E.T. on the push bike trying to get away from the aliens chasing them down the street.
Or they combine and suddenly E.T. has a little...
has teeth on the end of his fingers.
Yeah, little jutting mouth coming out of it. Or we do E.T. Or we do Alien Thing and we combine two absolutely diabolical creatures.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just pure malevolence but in a shape-shifting form.
So that's actually a genuinely fun one. Like the E.T. one's funny, but imagine the alien dropping onto a person who splutches like a drop.
Yeah.
And then is like the thing fighting and the alien tearing at it.
Yes.
Oh, that
it'd
is
be, like,
cool.
There'd be so much scope for just hideous practical effects.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's tasty. I wonder who has the rights to all of these things now. Like,
it'll be all Disney in 10 years.
Yeah. No, that's probably, that probably already is. So I had 2001 versus Alien. So it's the monolith kickstarts the evolution. So you just see the baby alien. And then it's like, it's the whole of 2001, but they're like on a spaceship. Oh, hello, honey. What would you like for your birthday? Oh, you would like but it's an alien. So they're all... how's mummy going? Oh, she's laying some eggs. Oh, okay, fair enough. And then my dumb one was The Big Chill versus Alien, where they all gather to say goodbye to their friend and then suddenly they're attacked by an alien. All right, that seems like that feels like a franchise crossover. That feels like a fun segment. And the final segment before we get to the squid bits is sum it up. What does the movie mean to you?
It is a perfect example of what I love. Look, horror, and I think this is probably more of a, it's not more of a horror movie, but it's definitely, it leans into more of the horror tropes.
Oh, it's the haunted house meets Cthulhu on a spaceship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm not a fan of horror in the main, only because most horror sucks.
Right.
To me, some of my favorite movies are actually horror movies, despite not loving the genre in the main, because when it really works, it elicits such a visceral reaction from me that I'm usually blown away that something that I know is fake can put me in a state of abject terror, like I'm a child again.
Yeah.
And so this to me is the perfect example of what I love in good horror: slow burn dread.
Yeah.
And, you know, because to me, jump scares is not, that's not horror. That's, you know, you've been shocked or you've been...
That's a roller coaster ride.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's not to say that you can't, you know, this movie has jump scares in it that are very effective. But again, it's because it's been building towards a thing. I think that this is just a great template for effective horror.
Yeah.
And to me, horror is, it's all-consuming dread.
Yeah. Yeah, this is one of my favorite all-time movies, and it just never disappoints with each rewatch. For me, the movie feels more relevant than ever before. A story where we can't trust a faceless corporation as everyday workers are screwed over for a plan that they barely comprehend. Throw in the fact that these same workers refuse to believe the evidence in front of them, and then a rampant disease runs rampant and kills most of the people. Turn that disease into an alien fuck machine, and you conclude that this movie is timeless and also perfect. So I have some squid bits for you, just a few. The blue glow that permeates the chamber where the eggs are found was achieved by using blue lights borrowed from The Who.
Oh.
The band were testing out various lighting effects for their next tour on the soundstage next door to where where Alien was being shot.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of crew members asked if they could borrow the blue lights, and the band complied. So that was cool.
Awesome.
An underrated effect in the film.
It's great.
It's such a...
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like that blue light is kind of the trigger as well. It's like, oh, time to wake up.
Yeah.
Little entree here. First in, best served.
Little burglar alarm. Yeah. Absolutely.
The cat wouldn't hiss at the xenomorph, so they put a darkened screen in front of the cat and then brought in a German shepherd dog. And then to get the right reaction, they revealed the cat and the dog to each other. And the cat went, what the fuck? Don't know how Peter would feel about that. The chest bursting scene was shot in one take with four cameras.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting. I think everyone knows that nobody knew that scene was going to happen as well. In case you didn't, none of the actors knew. So when you see that reaction, that is them going, like, that's them thinking, what's happening to John Hurt? They're not thinking about the character. I hadn't thought about that before. They're going, I think one of the actors is dying and you're still filming. Yeah. Writer Dan O'Bannon and Ridley Scott were fans of H.R. Giger's book Necronomicon.
Necronomicon.
Necronomicon. Necronomicon. And which was full of disturbing sexual imagery. In a 2002 TV documentary, The Alien Saga, O'Bannon said, "I'm going to attack the audience. I'm going to attack them sexually." The actor who played the alien is Nigerian actor Bolaji Badejo, who is 6'10". So that's same height as my friend Brett Wheeler, which actually freaked me out more because now I could actually work out the height of the alien. Ugh. So when I read that, I was like, oh God, he's Wheeler's height. Jesus. There's a novel from 2014 called Alien Out of the Shadows that continues Ripley's story, but Ash uploaded into the skate pod, and that's why it drifts for so many years. That's not a bad... Like, I'm not going to read it, but I like that as an idea.
That is great.
Initially, the actors kept fainting on set because the spacesuits were really hot and they were filming in summer. They had to have a nurse on standby with oxygen for the actors. The crew eventually adjusted the costumes. The inside of Ash was made of pasta, caviar, milk, and marbles. Yeah. Fun fact, Ian Holm hated milk.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
What a level of commitment.
Yeah. What's the thing that you hate if they said you had to act covered in it?
Oh, like meat.
Yeah.
I've heard many stories of like people who don't eat meat, actors who don't eat meat, be having to eat...
Yeah.
There's the famous episode of Seinfeld where Kenny Roaster's chicken shop opens up opposite Kramer's apartment. Right. And he becomes addicted to the chicken.
Right.
And there's a scene of him in bed just chowing down on chicken legs and yeah. wings, and he didn't eat meat.
Oh, my
But he
God.
Was like, you know, big comedy martyr. He's like, oh. I'll do it for the comedy.
Oh, man, no wonder he went crazy. Dutch customs officials gave HR Geiger grief because they thought his artwork for Alien was actual photographs. His response, where on earth did they think I could have photographed my subjects? Yeah. In hell, perhaps? I also have here, or the last night of the Melbourne Comedy Festival. Geiger's work nearly didn't make the cut because the studio thought his work was too obscene.
Yeah.
Ridley Scott said to the studio, are you kidding me? Obscene is good. We're doing an R-rated movie. I want to make you uncomfortable apart from the fact that it's scarier than shit.
Fuck yeah.
Imagine that. We're making a horror film. This is a bit too scary. Yeah. Sorry. The facehugger was going to be coloured green. But after Dan O'Bannon saw the natural coloured tone of it on set,
yeah.
he insisted they leave it unpainted, yeah. which is a winning move.
Yes. Yeah, it would have been not great as green.
It's like...
Martian men kind of stuff. Not great.
Like, I guess it would have been that dark, wet green, but I just... Anyway, I think it's perfect the way it is, because it's... The Nostromo was a self-contained set. You could only get in and out by walking all the way through it.
Great.
So that probably added to the claustrophobia. Yeah. They nearly filmed a scene where the alien would have examined Ripley's body in a quasi-sex scene and compare it to its own body. They didn't film this because they ran out of time. You know what? Like, I'm so happy they didn't film that. Like, as an idea.
It's a great idea.
But imagine if, like, so what was, like, was she not going to notice and it was going to come up and just kind of have a little...
Yuck.
A little look, a little sniff.
Everything we were just saying about the predatory aspect of the alien is confirmed by that.
Yeah.
Beyond just the imagery.
So I was dying to get to that bit when you were talking about stuff. The facehugger dissection scene was made with a plastic mold of the creature filled with raw oysters, and the tail was an intestine with air pumped through it.
Oh.
So doesn't that kind of somehow make it worse?
Yeah.
And I've got a nice squid bit to finish on because all of that was so gross.
Mm.
I've got a Tom Skerritt story.
Yeah.
So I saw Alien when it played one night at the Astor Theatre, and Skerritt came down for it.
Awesome.
He, this was about 7 years ago now, so I reckon at the time he was about 81.
Yeah.
81 or 82. Anyway, he was lively, he was fun. He even jumped the last few steps down, and you didn't think in any way that that was a bad idea. He looked like he could do it. You just went, oh my God. But later on in the interview, he mentioned he had a young daughter who was about 7, and even though nobody in the cinema said anything, you could feel this weirdness roll through the crowd, and I was so weirded out by it, and I was like, oh, just kind of like, what? And then I went home and looked it up, and she was adopted. So I don't like to judge anyone, but that story was heaps better.
Yes.
Tom, if you're listening, like, I think you're great, and I love you so much, and you are fantastic in this movie, and that is a beautiful story. Point out, that your kid is adopted. just so,
what a good man.
Just so you don't weird us out. Alien.
Great.
What a great film. And I'm going to go and have a shower with an iron brush. Thanks to Ben for helping me break down one of my all-time favourite movies. I still love it so much. It is definitely my favourite. I can completely understand people who prefer Aliens, but for me, it's this film all the way. We're getting to pretty much the end of Season 5 of Big Squid. Well, we're not quite there yet, but we're getting close. So keep an eye out for a fan favourite double episode of Space Podyssey coming up in a couple of weeks. It's one that's a new classic. It's not that old. It's not that old at all, but already seems to have achieved classic status, and rightfully so, too. Also, thanks to our Patreon subscriber of the episode, Craig. I hope you found enough time in your busy schedule to enjoy this podcast. I'm guessing you probably listen to it in 12-minute dribs and drabs as you drive back and forth from work. if you'd like an episode dedicated to you along with a host of bonus material and podcasts, please head to patreon.com/JustinHamilton_BigSquid and you will find a tier that suits you. I'll be back on Thursday with Dr. Aditi Paul, but until then, let's finish today's podcast with a quote from Ridley Scott. In my view, the only way to see a film remains the way the filmmaker intended. Inside a large movie theater with great sound and pristine picture. Yep. You know how I feel about that. Preach, Ridley, preach. Until then.